Good morning, church. Steve, I appreciated your efforts this morning. I thought the singing was really good, too. And I don't think you should call yourself a number four. I just don't think that. Maybe 3.5. Maybe. No. Did a wonderful job. Really appreciated you this morning. And I appreciate you all this morning, church. It's so good to be with you. It's good to be gathered together. It's good to see Walt with us back there. It's good to have the Rucker baby with us. And what's the little boy's name? Kate, what did you say his name was? Jake. Is that right? No, it's Jade, right? Jade Ryan. It's good to have her with us this morning as well. I know that you guys may not have known what Jade's middle name was going to be, but Rain definitely knew what her name was going to be and told me about it right after she was born, that her name was going to be Jade Ryan. So kudos to I know. So we're glad to have her with us this morning. And congrats to all of our students who graduated on Friday night. I know that was graduation night for Coffee County, and I know it's a really busy time of year for those students as they're making their way to do something. Whether they're going off to college or off to a school, or they're finding a job that suits their skills. I mean, it's a lot to do. I remember what it was like at that particular point in my life to actually have to do something now. Maybe you remember that, like accomplish something, live up to your potential, live up to your promise. Adults, do you remember that time when you were like, oh no, everything has stopped being all laid out for me, and now I've got to make some decisions about who I'm going to be. Maybe you remember what it was like to be sort of thrust out into the world where all of a sudden you're supposed to live up to everything everybody's invested in you, your parents and your teachers and your grandparents and everything everybody's kind of thrown into you. You're supposed to go do something with that now. Well, the Christians in Galatia were feeling under some similar pressures. On the one hand, they have the Judaizing missionaries who are telling them that if you really want to live up to your potential, if you really want to be the best Christian you can be, then what you really need to do is to keep the law of Moses. And on the other hand, they've got the Apostle Paul who's telling them, no, you just need to continue living by faith in Jesus Christ, and no amount of law keeping is going to improve your standing with God. So as we continue our study through the book of Galatians, we've got some really critical questions that are being posed to the Galatian Christians. And it deals with a point that Paul has brought up earlier. Now he's going to start to deal with it. And likely, and we don't know, certainly, because we're listening to one part of a conversation. Paul is dealing with a situation that we're having to read between the lines to figure out. But it looks like that he brought this up because he knew those other missionaries were coming in here, there, and making a point. They were coming in there, and they were using this argument against him. And this question is, who is really a child of Abraham? That's the real question. Because that's what the Galatians wanted to be. They really wanted to be children of Abraham. Now, to you and me, this sounds like a completely irrelevant question. I mean, we're so far removed from Abraham and from the influence of these Judaizing missionaries and the covenant with Abraham that is going on. We're so far beyond that that to us we're like, who cares who's really a child of Abraham? That doesn't make any difference at all. But it's actually a really good point that they were making. Because God entered into this covenant with Abraham, and through this covenant, he promised that he was going to forever change. It was going to bless all the nations of the world. And this was not a limited promise. This was an unlimited promise that through his covenant with Abraham, he was going to bless all of the world, all of mankind throughout the world. And later on, during the time of Moses, God comes to these descendants of Abraham, and he tells them what it looks like to live in covenant with him. And he gives them a law, the law, and told them, this is your new way of life. If you want to live in covenant with me, this is your way of life. And when he finished giving him this law, he says, now, you've got two options. You can either choose life and live in this law, or you can choose death and not keep the law. So given the choice of either life with God or death apart from God, wouldn't you keep the law? I mean, why wouldn't you want to become a true child of Abraham and keep God's very clear commands so that you and your descendants might live? That was the question, right? But now here comes Paul, and he's telling them that it's not as cut and dried as these other teachers are saying. And this is what he tells them in Galatians chapter 4, verses 21 through 23. He says, "Tell me, you who want to be under the law, are you not aware what the law says? For it's written that Abraham had two sons, one by the slave woman and the other by the free woman. Now his son by the slave woman was born according to the flesh, but his son by the free woman was born as the result of a divine promise." So we're going to pause right here because we need to do a little flashback scene. Not everybody's going to be up to speed on this story with Abraham. So maybe the best way that we can get what Paul is saying here is go through a really quick coverage of the biblical narrative of Abraham's experience. He starts in Genesis chapter 12, goes on through really Genesis 21, his life experiences. But when Abraham, or then he was Abram, he was 75 years old. And Abraham, or Abram, as he was called then, he does not have any children. Abram and Sarah, and Abram's, he doesn't even know God then. He's worshiping idols, living in his kind of own little world. But God chooses Abram, and he tells him to go to the land of Canaan, this promised land. And then God makes him several promises, not only that this land, this vast land, is going to belong to his descendants, but the fact that he's going to have descendants. Now, if you're 75 and you haven't had any kids by now, you're thinking, I don't think that's going to stay in our family's line for very long, right? Abram's wife, Sarah, she is unable to have children at this point, but she and Abram have, of course, they've been hoping and praying for a child. And so they are really, you know, in need of a child to continue the family line. And if you were a woman at that time and you did not have children, particularly if you did not have sons, how could the family line continue? So they take God up on this promise. I mean, it's a cup of water. It's a promise of a cup of water in a barren desert, right? You got no kids, and God says, I'll give you one, but you need to go over here to Canaan. So they're like, okay, we'll do it, God, whatever you say. They follow his instructions. They go to Canaan. 10 years later, still no kids. So Sarah is like, we're too late. That ship has sailed. And she's like, this promised child has not arrived yet. And by now, she's not just past her prime. She's past the ability to have children by a good shot. And so what sounds pretty shocking to us, but was pretty allowable then, she asks Abram to give her a child through her handmaiden, Hagar. She's like, okay, obviously I can't have any kids anymore, but God promised to give us a child. And so if you give a child to my servant, my slave, my handmaiden, Hagar, that will count as a child. Maybe that's what God meant when he promised to give us a child. He was just like, no, you'll just figure out a way to get kids and I'll bless those kids. And so this was a perfectly legal act. This was a perfectly acceptable, societally acceptable act. It was not what God meant at all. But Abram does what Sarah asks. And sure enough, Hagar does get with child. She becomes pregnant. And so they're thinking, hooray, the plan works just like we thought it would. Only maybe it worked a little too well, because now Hagar sees how important she's become. She's carrying the one and only child, and she starts acting like it, even though she's just a slave. And Sarah becomes like super jealous. She's She's like, no, I'm the wife. I'm the important one here. You are not the important one. And eventually it all blows up. It comes to a head. And Sarah throws Hagar out into the desert. She's alone. She's pregnant. This is an actual picture. Hagar is alone. She is pregnant. She is in this barren wilderness, desert, harsh conditions. She breaks down and she's crying. She cries out to Abram's God. God hears her. And even though it's not, this God's like, this is not what I decided at all. This is not my plan, but I'm going to take care of you, Hagar. I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to take care of your descendants. So he sends her back with these promises. He's like, you go back to Abram and Sarah. I'll take care of you. I'll kind of work this out. So he sends her back, and sure enough, she goes back, and not too long afterwards, she has a son, Ishmael. Now, Ishmael, being the only kid, Abram's only kid, he gets pretty well spoiled. Abram's become pretty well-to-do, probably through keeping his flocks, that sort of thing. But he's become a man of some importance, and Ishmael's the only kid. And for those of you who have had only children, you know, it's just pretty easy to think, well, this is it. We're just going to, you know, whatever we've got goes on this child. And so Ishmael becomes not just the favorite son, but the only son. So more than 10 years after that, God comes to Abraham again, and he promises him, no, my promise is still good. You are going to have a child by Sarah, and you're going to name that child Isaac. Sure enough, a year later, Isaac is born. This is just a cartoon. It's not the real picture. But I couldn't have the authority to put it up. So hooray, God's plan now works, except that now they've got some real problems, because by this time Ishmael's a young teenager. Right? And teenagers is, been used to being spoiled. He's been used to being an only child. And along comes Isaac. Isaac is now going to inherit all this stuff from Abraham. So Isaac is his rival. And everyone knows in your heart of hearts how ruthless and cold teenage boys can be, particularly when they feel threatened in some way. That is not an offense to teenage boys. I myself am a teenager, of course. But I remember, and I see this on a pretty regular basis, that when teenage boys feel threatened, they're like, you know, I'll cut you. And so that's the way Ishmael is. I don't know if they really say that, but Ishmael feels threatened, and so it's posing a real problem in their household. And by the time Isaac is old enough to be weaned, around 3 years of old, the only solution, for everyone's safety and sanity, they've got to send Hagar and Ishmael away. It breaks Abraham's heart. I mean, this Ishmael was his only son for a long time, but he sends Hagar and Ishmael away. God does take care of them. Sure enough, they make it. But it had to be done. They had to be sent away. Now, on the surface, by the way, do not tell anybody that you heard the story that way at this church. Just say you read it online or something. That was the really fast version. So on the surface, this just probably seems like, you know, just another middle-class family having ordinary problems. I mean, who hasn't gone through that, right? But when you scratch beneath the surface of what's going on here, there are implications that carry tremendous spiritual power. Now, there are some also long-lasting consequences that are worked out through the people, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about really spiritual nuances that get carried out. Abraham, Sarah and Hagar, Ishmael and Isaac, they represent, Paul says, spiritual realities. Yet, yes, they are real people. This is a real historic circumstance. But they also represent more than just themselves. And their relationships teach us some really important lessons. So we're going to look at their story for the lessons Paul is teaching. Paul is going to use these lessons, by the way, to teach the Galatians. So he says, if you think about it, Ishmael was born of the will of the flesh. This is like, we're supposed to have a son. Let's get a son. Let's figure out a way to get a son. This is all just, they're working it out. He's born of the flesh. And it reveals Abraham's lack of faith and Abraham's terrible failure and weakness. And it was Abraham trying to help God fulfill his promise to give him a son. And so Abraham and Sarah had given up hope, right, that Sarah would ever have a son. So they just were like, well, maybe that God just told us to figure it out. And by the way, that's a pretty identifiable circumstance to be in. Sometimes you and I, we can read through Scripture and we come across these promises of God, and it's like, and God told me to do this and he told me to do that, but I don't know how to do it, and guess I'll just figure that out for myself. And we can take some matters into our own hands that were never meant to be taken into our own hands. So Abraham and Sarah, they did that with some terrible consequences. And Abraham tries to help God keep his promises by producing a child through Sarah's handmaiden, Hagar. And therefore, Ishmael, who is born of the flesh, is a symbol of bondage and failure and doubt. That's what Ishmael represents. And this, says Paul, is exactly like our attempts to please God by works of the law. It's trying to help God in the clumsiest way possible creates nothing but problems for you and everyone else. It will never succeed. The Galatian Christians, they saw themselves as children of Abraham. But Paul's there to remind them, look, Abraham didn't just have one child. Abraham had two children, one by Hagar and one by Sarah, one by a slave woman, one by a freed woman, one by the will of the flesh, one by the promise of God. Abraham's relationship with Sarah was very different from his relationship with Hagar. For one, Sarah was his wife. And so that was a really big deal. But in this particular story, the even more important thing, it was that God had made the promise to Abraham and Sarah, not to Abraham and Hagar. He made the promise to Abraham and Sarah. And Sarah knew that. And Abraham knew that. They knew the promise was for them. They just didn't really believe the promise was for them. And so therefore, because the promise was made to Abraham and Sarah, The only son of Sarah that Sarah had, Isaac, he was the one who was born of the promise. He is the one who is the full heir. He is the one that God promised. And because God was doing something amazing with Abraham and Sarah, he was proven, by the way, by using Abraham and Sarah, not because they were such great people, because obviously they had some serious moral failures along the way, but he was proving that he could work with really flawed and broken people who were weak and unable to do anything right on their own, and that he could work with those sorts of people and do amazing things. He was proven that he could work with people who were practically dead and make them alive. That he was, in fact, the living and true God, unlike every other God out there. The only thing was that it took a lot of patience and a lot of faith in God's promises for Abraham and Sarah to get there. And that's what Isaac represents. He represents the way of faith. It's not the easy way, but it's the promise of God. So Paul, talking about this story, says, so, you know, Ishmael's born of faith. Ishmael's born of the flesh. Isaac is born of faith. But Sarah and Hagar, they represent something too. In a way, Hagar represents the old covenant and Sarah represents the new covenant. We're not going to go all through the end of chapter 4, Galatians 4 here, but you can read it for yourself. And he explicitly says, sometimes you have to figure out, by the way, when you're reading a biblical allegory, what represents what. Paul doesn't do that. A lot of Jesus' stories, you've got to figure some of them out for yourself, although they can become clear. But Paul's stories, he's like, no, I'm just going to tell you, Hagar represents the old covenant, and Sarah represents the new covenant. And so he says, those who are born to Hagar are born into bondage to the old covenant, because they are slaves as well. Those who are born to Sarah are born in the freedom of being true heirs of the new covenant. In fact, this is what he tells the Galatians. He says, now you, brothers and sisters, like Isaac, are children of promise. And what do children of promise get to do? They get to live in a household that is free from the children of the slaves. Because we sent the slave woman and her son away because they were abusing us and mistreating us. That those people who tried to persecute you and harm you and bring you down, they are no longer in the picture where they can hurt you anymore. Now again, for the Galatian Christians who are having all this pressure, Paul is telling them that the Judaizing missionaries are like Ishmael, pressing and pressing and pressing because they're jealous of the Galatians' new status as heirs of the promise. That they want to bring them down to their level and be in bondage to the law. And again, we don't live under that sort of pressure to keep the law. You may not know anyone who is a Christian who is bound to be a law keeper. And we don't face the sort of persecution that Isaac faced or that these Galatians faced and shortly would face even more under Roman authority. But at the same time, there is no shortage of people who are ready to tell you why you aren't really a Christian, who are ready to point out all the ways that you are not really a child of promise, or at least how you aren't as much a Christian as they are. And sometimes they'll do you the favor of telling you this out loud, but a lot of times they'll just imply it, or they'll just look down at you and pass the judgment that we all know is behind those eyes. And when we flip that script 180 degrees, it shows us that if we're not careful, we can find ourselves standing in Ishmael's shoes. And we can be telling others why they aren't really the children of promise. How really we are the children of promise and they aren't, and they don't do things right, and they're not really in a right relationship with God. But the thing is, children of promise, true children of promise, they are free. Now, I don't know how long ago it has been for you to stand on the precipice of a playground and watch school-aged children run free. I mean, come out for recess after they've been cooped up doing stupid math or English or whatever it is they've been forced into bondage doing. And then you set them free and you're like, no, go play, children. Just stay on the playground, right? Please, if you can, just stay on the playground. And they get out and they run free. But they don't all run free in the exact same way, do they? Some kids are going to the seesaw. Some kids are going to the swing. Some kids are going to get out and dig in the dirt. Some little girls are going to start braiding each other's hair. It's going to happen all over the playground. And it's going to be going a myriad of different directions. So we have to expect that when we, like Isaac, like the Galatians, are children of promise, born of the free woman into freedom, that we are going to live in very different ways inside of God's promises. That we are going to look very different from one another because we are not slaves, because we are free. And that freedom is going to be expressed in a variety of ways. We have to expect brothers and sisters living inside the promises of God to look very different from us. Now, I'm going to give you just one little caveat here. I don't think Paul is saying that there ought not to be any correction between brothers and sisters in Christ, that anybody can do anything. Some people can dance on top of the monkey bars or punch each other in the face, right? Teachers, you may tell kids you're free on the playground, but there are certain things that you don't do that are unhealthy. I don't think he's telling the Galatian Christians, no, unhealthy doctrine is fine. No, immorality is fine. I don't think that's what Paul's saying at all. And I don't think that's the point they're getting. The point they are getting is that they don't have to be forced to play one way according to the rules of the Judaizing teachers. That rather, they too are children of promise, and as children of promise, they are free as well. Just like Isaac, just like the descendants of Abraham were called to be. They were called to be in freedom. And Paul says, you don't have to go back to that bondage of the law. I've lived under that bondage. I know that bondage. I know what it's like to wake up every day in fear that I'm going to mess up so badly that I'm going to be out of a relationship with God. And I'm telling you, you don't have to live that way. I know what it's like to walk every day afraid of who I'm going to touch, that it might make me unclean, that I'm accidentally going to eat the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, think the wrong thing, go the wrong place, have the wrong sort of conversation, that I'm going to be doing something, not even on purpose, that's going to get me out of relationship with God. And he's telling the Galatians, you don't have to live that way. And if you, like me, were raised Church of Christ, you probably know that fear as well. What if you're sitting there one Sunday morning and somebody just stands up and says something that's wrong, and nobody corrects them? Man, y'all are all just leaving, going to hell. Or what if you, in a moment of frustration, you let a word fly, and then you die, and then all of a sudden, now you're facing God, and you've got all this on your conscience? Or what if you're doing something wrong and you don't even know is wrong? Brothers and sisters, what Paul is saying is, we don't have to live under that fear. That our God is a gracious God, and that we are not born into slavery but into freedom, that we are not children of bondage but children of promise. May God bless you this week as you live that promise to its fullest. And if you need the prayers of this congregation for encouragement, for forgiveness, for strength, or if you just would like to express something that you need to get off your chest, we want you to know this morning that we are open and ready to walk with you and walk beside you. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?